A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
I picked up a wrench the other day. Just a standard 16-ounce job from the hardware store. And there's this moment when you first lift it. That weight in your hand, the balance, the way the grip feels like it's going to stay put through about 1,000 turns. You think, this is a good tool. Then you flip it over and see the stamp, made in China. And suddenly you're not sure whether what you felt was quality or just. A story you told yourself. Daniel wrote in this week with a whole thing about Stanley Tools. He'd just learned that Stanley was founded in Connecticut and is still headquartered there, and it got him thinking about something a lot of us feel. That little surge of pride when you find out a brand you trust still has American roots. But then the doubt creeps in. How much of that brand is actually made here anymore? Because the shelves are filling up with Chinese brands on Amazon, and companies are marketing themselves as US-owned and operated like it's a quality guarantee, and the whole thing raises a question that's harder to answer than most people admit. Is the connection between American manufacturing and quality real, or is it just a shortcut our brains take? And on the flip side, is the stigma against Chinese manufacturing actually earned at this point, or are we all operating on outdated assumptions from the 1980s? So today we're going to pull that question apart, starting with the company that got Daniel thinking about all this.
Stanley, founded in 1843 in New Britain, Connecticut by Frederick T. Stanley. The company stayed in Connecticut through the entire 20th century, merged with Black & Decker in 2010 to form Stanley Black & Decker, and the combined company is still headquartered in New Britain to this day. So Daniel's right about the roots. They run deep. But here's where it gets interesting. The vast majority of Stanley-branded consumer tools, the $15 hammer at Home Depot, the socket set that goes on sale at Christmas, those are made in China and Mexico. The company does still manufacture some things in the U.S. The FatMax tape measure line, for example, that's still American-made, but the overall footprint? Heavily offshore, and it's been that way for decades.
So the brand Daniel trusts because he associates it with U.S. manufacturing, mostly isn't.
Right, and the thing is, the trust survived the shift. People still think of Stanley as a solid, reliable brand. The reputation for quality didn't collapse when the factories moved to Shenzhen, which tells us something.
It tells us the reputation was never actually about the factory location.
That's the paradox we're sitting in. The warm feeling of made in USA is real. People genuinely feel it, but whatever made Stanley Tools good was portable. It could cross an ocean. And that means the geography was never doing the work people thought it was doing.
So let's trace that. Where does the made in USA halo actually come from?
There's a well-documented psychological mechanism called the country of origin effect. Basically, consumers take whatever feelings they have about a country, positive or negative, and spill them onto the products that come from there. If you think of Germany as precise and engineering-driven, you'll assume a German-made tool is precise. If you think of Italy as stylish, Italian shoes feel more fashionable. It's a halo. The positive association with the country radiates outward and colors your perception of the product before you've even used it.
And for Americans of a certain age, the association with U.S. manufacturing is almost mythic. Post-war through the 1970s, American factories did set global quality standards. Detroit made cars the world wanted. American steel built skylines. There's a cultural memory of industrial craftsmanship that's tied up with national identity. The machinist who took pride in his work, the union label, the whole thing.
And that memory has real emotional weight. It's not fake. The quality was there. But what people forget is that it wasn't the geography producing quality, it was the system. The specifications, the training, the inspection regimes, the culture of not letting bad parts leave the floor. Those things are practices, not latitudes and longitudes.
The other half of this, though, is the stigma against Chinese manufacturing. That also has a history, and it's not pulled from nowhere.
No, it's not. In the 1980s and 90s, China flooded global markets with ultra-cheap exports, and a lot of it was terrible. Plastic toys that shattered on impact. Electronics with wiring that would make an electrician weep. I remember opening a cassette player in 1987, and the solder joints looked like someone had applied them with a butter knife. The reputation was earned. But here's the thing about reputations. They tend to freeze in place while the reality keeps moving.
The flip that proves the point is Japan.
In the 1950s, Made in Japan was a punchline. It meant cheap junk, tin toys, bad optics, things that broke if you looked at them wrong. Fast forward 30 years, and Made in Japan meant precision. Toyota, Sony, Nikon. The country didn't change its fundamental character. What changed was the specification. Japanese manufacturers decided to compete on quality instead of price, and they built the systems to do it. The stigma evaporated because the products forced it to.
And nobody in 1985 was walking around saying, "Oh, but the stigma was earned. The stigma was earned." It just stopped mattering when the products got good.
China's been going through a version of that same arc, but faster and at staggering scale. The same factory ecosystem in Shenzhen that produces a $2 toy that breaks in a day also produces iPhones. And Apple's quality standards are notoriously exacting. Foxconn runs statistical process control on every production line. They track defect rates per million units. The factory is capable of both extremes, garbage and excellence, and which one you get depends entirely on what the buyer specifies, inspects, and pays for.
So the factory is like a piano. It can play anything. The question is, who's sitting at the bench and what sheet music they brought?
That's actually a very good way to put it. The capability is there. The question is what you demand. And a lot of Western companies that source from China demand very little, because they're competing on price and they know consumers will blame the factory, not the brand.
Wait, say that again. The brand knows the consumer will blame the factory?
If a tool breaks, the average consumer doesn't think, "Wow, the American company that ordered this must have written a terrible spec." They think cheap Chinese junk. The country takes the blame, and the brand that cut corners gets a pass. It's a perverse incentive. The stigma actually protects the companies that are most responsible for the quality problems.
That's grim. So the brand is essentially outsourcing the blame along with the manufacturing.
They're outsourcing the blame, and the factory, which is just building to the spec they were given, takes the reputational hit. Meanwhile, the brand's logo is still on the shelf, still coasting on whatever goodwill it built up in the 1970s.
It's a strange kind of alchemy. You send the work overseas, you send the quality standards overseas with it, but you keep the reputation at home, and somehow the geography gets blamed for what was actually an accounting decision.
That's precisely it, and it creates this weird dynamic where the country of origin stigma becomes a shield for the very companies perpetuating low quality. As long as consumers blame China, the brands don't have to change their sourcing practices. The stigma is functionally useful to them.
But it also means that when a company does invest in quality from Chinese factories, the results can be extraordinary. Let me give you two case studies that make this concrete. Go!
First, Stanley Black and Decker themselves. They run a tiered manufacturing strategy. The professional and industrial lines, Proto, Mac Tools, those often have tighter specifications and more U.S. content. The consumer lines, the Stanley branded stuff you grab at Home Depot, those are made in China to a lower price point. Same parent company, same brand name on the shelf, completely different quality tiers. The difference isn't where the factory is, it's what they paid for. They decided the homeowner market won't support the cost of the higher spec, so they spec lower. And the tool is worse, and it says made in China, and the consumer nods and says, "Yep, that tracks."
When actually the company made a deliberate choice to produce a cheaper tool.
The company made a choice. The factory just built what they were paid to build. And here's the thing. If Stanley took that exact same consumer line spec and gave it to a factory in Ohio, the tool would still be mediocre. The spec is the spec. The location doesn't rescue a bad set of requirements.
What's the second case?
Milwaukee Tool. This one's almost too perfect. Milwaukee is owned by Tektronic Industries, TTI, which is based in Hong Kong. The tools are engineered in the US but manufactured heavily in China. And Milwaukee has built a reputation for professional-grade quality that rivals or exceeds American-made competitors. Their M118 fuel line commands premium prices. Tradespeople swear by them, and they're made in China. If the geography determined quality, Milwaukee couldn't exist. But it does, because TTI invested in specification rigor and inspection.
So the brand that proves Chinese manufacturing can be excellent is owned by a Hong Kong company, engineered in the US, and made in China.
The supply chain is completely global and the quality is excellent. The country of manufacture tells you nothing useful about the tool. You'd have to be willfully ignoring the evidence on the job site to think otherwise.
And tradespeople aren't sentimental about this stuff. They'll use whatever doesn't break.
They're the ultimate pragmatists. If the Chinese-made Milwaukee outperforms the American-made competitor, the American-made competitor loses the shelf space. Sentiment doesn't survive the first stripped bolt.
So what actually determines whether a product is good? If it's not the country, what are the levers?
Four things. First, specification rigor. How detailed and enforceable the contract is. Are you specifying the steel alloy, the tolerance on every dimension, the coating thickness, the acceptable defect rate? Or are you saying, make me a hammer and hoping for the best? Second, the inspection regime. Third-party testing, factory audits, statistical sampling of every shipment. You don't trust the factory to tell you it's good, you verify. Third, the price you pay. You get what you pay for in manufacturing contracts. If you squeeze the factory on unit cost, they'll find corners to cut. They have to. Their margins are razor thin. Fourth, relationship longevity. Long-term supplier relationships build institutional knowledge. The factory learns what you care about. They invest in meeting your standards because they know the contract will still be there next year.
So it's a system. Spec, inspect, pay properly, stick around.
And none of those things are geographic. A factory in Ohio with a vague spec and no inspection will produce garbage. A factory in Dongguan with a tight spec and rigorous inspection will produce excellence. The country is a proxy variable. It correlates with quality in some cases because certain countries had built reputations for certain practices, but it's not causal. It's not the thing making the tool good.
The proxy variable point is worth sitting with for a second, because proxies are useful. They're shortcuts that work most of the time. The problem is when you mistake the shortcut for the thing itself.
Right? Made in USA works as a proxy because, historically, American factories had good systems. But if an American company today cuts its quality budget and coasts on reputation, the proxy fails. And made in China works as a negative proxy because, historically, a lot of Chinese exports were bottom-of-the-barrel cheap. But if a company like Milwaukee or Apple invests in world-class systems at a Chinese factory, the proxy fails in the other direction. The proxy is only as good as the underlying conditions, and those conditions change.
And they've changed dramatically in China over the past 20 years?
Massively. The manufacturing ecosystem in Shenzhen alone is unlike anything else on Earth. You've got supply chains for components that don't exist anywhere else at comparable speed and density. You need a custom injection mold? Someone within 20 miles can do it in days. The capability is staggering. The question is whether the buyer wants to tap into the high end of that capability or the low end.
So why does the stigma persist? If Milwaukee and Apple and 1,000 other brands are proving daily that Chinese manufacturing can be world class, why hasn't the perception shifted the way it did with Japan?
Part of it's volume. For every Milwaukee drill coming out of a high-spec Chinese factory, there are 10,000 units of absolute junk flooding Amazon from brands that exist for 6 months and then vanish. The sheer quantity of low-quality Chinese goods still hitting Western markets keeps the stigma fed. It's hard for the signal to break through the noise.
It's like trying to have a reputation for fine dining while someone's running a hot dog cart out front with your name on it.
And the hot dog carts outnumber the restaurants 1,000 to 1. The other part is that the brands themselves don't exactly advertise where their stuff is made.
No, they don't. Milwaukee doesn't put made in China in big letters on the box. They let the reputation do the talking, and the reputation is built on performance, not provenance. Which is actually the honest approach. The tool is good because it's good, not because of where the building was. But it also means the data point that would shift public perception never gets delivered. The consumer who buys the Milwaukee drill and loves it never learns where it was made, so the stigma never gets challenged. There's another layer here that Daniel's question gets at indirectly. he mentioned companies marketing themselves as US-owned and operated as a quality signal. That's a marketing strategy that exploits the proxy.
It works. You see it everywhere now. Brands putting American flags on packaging, emphasizing headquarters location, using phrases like American-owned or designed in the USA. It's a way of borrowing the halo without necessarily earning it through manufacturing practices. Some of those companies are making things in the US, many are not. But the marketing taps into the same emotional response Daniel described, that little surge of pride and trust.
Their reputation was built over 180 years, and it survived the offshore shift. People trust the brand, not the factory address.
Which brings us back to what the brand actually stands for. Stanley's reputation isn't a lie. Their tools are generally solid for the price. But what they're selling is a century of specification discipline. They know how to write a contract. They know what tolerances matter and which ones don't. They've built supplier relationships that span decades. The quality is real. It's just not located where people think it is.
Daniel's trust in Stanley isn't misplaced. He's just attributing it to the wrong thing.
Right. The tool in his hand is good because someone wrote a tight spec and enforced it, not because of which side of the Pacific it was assembled on.
On that note, Hilbert has actually been inside the factories we're talking about.
They're not all the same. I did about 8 months of quality inspection for a small hardware importer. This was 2003-2004. They'd send me to Shenzhen and Dongguan to check shipments before they left the port. My job was to open crates, pull samples, and reject anything that didn't match the spec sheet. 1 week I'm in Dongguan at a factory making knockoff Stanley knives for the local market. No quality control, no spec sheet, just banging them out. The blades had burrs you could shave with, wrong kind of shave, but still. 20 miles away, same industrial park basically, I walk into the facility that was making Milwaukee's M18 batteries. Clean rooms. Statistical process control charts on every wall, updated hourly. Rejection rate lower than anything I'd seen in the US at that point. The difference wasn't China. The difference was who was paying and what they demanded.
What happened to the importer you worked for?
Went under. They kept trying to save 20 cents per unit. I'd reject a shipment. They'd argue with the factory. Factory would say, fine, we'll fix it. Next shipment, same problems. They never wanted to pay for the higher spec production line. Eventually, their reputation was just garbage. Retailers stopped taking their calls. You can make anything, anywhere. The question is whether you're willing to pay for the quality you claim to want. Most people aren't.
The 20 cents thing is exactly the dynamic. That's the margin where the whole decision lives. And the brand that saves the 20 cents knows the consumer will blame the factory, not them.
We had a saying, the spec sheet is a wish. The inspection is the prayer. The wire transfer is the only thing the factory actually reads.
I'm going to be thinking about that one for a while.
I still have a sample case from those days. 12 identical-looking utility knives. One of them's the real Stanley, made to their spec. The other 11 are knockoffs from factories I visited. You can't tell them apart by looking. You use each one for about 20 minutes and 9 of them fail. 2 are fine. 1's better than the Stanley. I always wondered what happened to the factory that made the better one. They were just waiting for someone to pay them what they were worth.
The cutting room floor detail that didn't fit anywhere else. There's a specific clause in Apple's supplier agreements that requires factories to maintain what's called a closed-loop quality system. Every defect gets traced back to its point of origin on the line, and the process gets adjusted within the same shift. That's not a Chinese practice or an American practice. It's an Apple practice, and it works because they enforce it. The factory doesn't care about the clause until the buyer cares about the clause.
That's the thing about enforcement. It's expensive. It requires people on the ground. It requires audits. It requires rejecting shipments and eating the delay. Most companies don't want to pay for that either. They want the quality without the cost of verifying it.
Which leaves us with an open question. Chinese brands themselves, Xiaomi, DJI, Anker, are building global reputations for quality now. They're not hiding behind American brand names. They're selling under their own flags. If that trend continues, does the made in China stigma eventually fade the way made in Japan did? And what happens to the premium that made in USA commands when consumers realize it's often a marketing claim rather than a quality guarantee?
The Japan flip took about 30 years. China's been on a similar trajectory for about 20. The difference is that Chinese brands are now doing what Sony and Toyota did, building their own reputations directly, not through intermediaries. Anker chargers are excellent. DJI owns the drone market. Xiaomi makes phones that compete with Samsung on build quality. The stigma is already eroding among people who pay attention to the products rather than the labels.
Once those brands have enough market share and enough consumer trust, the country of origin effect starts working in the other direction. People start associating Chinese brands with quality, and the halo flips. We saw it happen with Japan. We saw it happen with Korea. Nobody in 1990 thought Hyundai would ever compete with Toyota, and now they do.
The question is whether the Made in USA premium survives that flip. If consumers start trusting Chinese brands directly, what's left of the American manufacturing halo? At that point, it becomes purely a nostalgia product. And nostalgia is a real market. People pay extra for things that feel authentic, but it's not the same as a quality premium. It's a vibe premium.
Daniel's trust in Stanley isn't wrong. The brand earned it. But what it earned it with wasn't a factory in Connecticut. It was a century of knowing what good looks like and refusing to ship anything less. The tool is good because someone cared enough to spec it right and check the work. That's portable. That travels. And it's the thing worth trusting, wherever the building happens to be.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, tell someone who argues about tools on the internet. They'll either love it or get very angry, and either way we win. Email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.